VOA News. I'm Tom McNeil. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's chief foreign policy advisor said Sunday Israel has accepted the outline of U.S. President Joe Biden's ceasefire deal. Details from Reuters' Alex Cohen.
Israel's defense minister Yoav Gallant said on Sunday that Israel would not accept Hamas continuing to rule Gaza at any stage during the process to wind down the war, and that it was examining alternatives to the Islamist group. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby told ABC News Sunday that if Hamas agrees to the deal to end the Gaza war, the U.S. expects Israel to also accept the plan.
Qatar and Saudi Arabia on Sunday condemned an Israeli parliamentary bill that seeks to label UNRWA the main provider of aid for Palestinians in Gaza terrorist group, joining a growing number of nations opposed to the proposal. The bill, which passed a preliminary vote in Parliament last week, is a product of increasingly tense relations between Israel and the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports on tensions between Ukraine and China over Ukraine's peace talks.
This was Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin's first face-to-face meeting with his Chinese counterpart, Defense Minister Dong Jun. High-level talks that China had rejected until recently. Austin insisted war is avoidable and dialogue is necessary.
And every conversation is not going to be a happy conversation, but it is important that we continue to talk to each other.
There is much to talk about, including China's military threats against democratic Taiwan. And in the disputed South China Sea, Chinese ships have harassed much smaller Philippine vessels.
That's VOA's Bill Gallo reporting. This is VOA News. And again, AP correspondent Karen Chalmers on tensions between Ukraine and China over Ukraine's peace talks.
Ukraine's president has accused China of pressuring other countries not to attend upcoming Ukraine peace talks. Speaking at Asia's premier security conference in Singapore, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said that China was hampering peace in Ukraine. To do everything so that leaders do not come to the peace summit, to push them, pressure them, that definitely does not bring peace closer. And that is not only support to Russia, that is basically support of war. China has staked out what it says is a neutral position on the war, putting it at odds with Ukraine, the United States, and most of Europe. Its trade with Russia has grown, easing the economic impact of Western sanctions. I'm Karen Chalmers.
Ballot counting continues in an election that will likely give Mexico its first female president. But the heat, violence, and polarization continue right through Election Day. People turned out to vote in the township in Cuitzeo and Zeo in the western state, despite the fact that a town council candidate was shot to death by two hitmen aboard a motorcycle just hours before the election. Nearly 100 million people were registered to vote in the race to replace the outgoing president, Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador. There's been a seismic political shift in South Africa, where the African National Congress lost its parliamentary majority for the first time, getting just 40% of the vote. Kate Bartlett reports.
The question is, who will the ANC partner with? That decision will have a huge effect on Africa's most developed economy and the country's political future. Businesses will be rooting for a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, for years the official opposition, which came in second with more than 21% of the vote. A surprise third, nudging out Julius Malema's populist economic freedom fighters, was the Mkhonto wa Sizwe Party, or MK, led by former President Jacob Zuma. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Earthquakes have again struck Japan's north-central region of Ishikawa, that is still recovering from the destruction left by a powerful quake on January 1st. Shaking Monday that started with a 5.9 magnitude quake left only minor damage. There was no danger of a tsunami. Two houses damaged in a January 1st quake collapsed, but no injuries or other damage was reported so far. It was slightly subsided, but officials urge people to be cautious, especially near buildings that were damaged earlier. The January quake killed 260 people, and more than 3,300 residents remain evacuated. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today's Monday, June 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South Africa announces final election results.
These elections were undoubtedly the most difficult and the most highly contested.
President Ramaphosa is in search of partners to build a coalition government. The MK party says it will not engage the ANC as long as President Ramaphosa remains at the helm of the party. Rita Jalabuduo will report on her visit returning Liberian refugees from Ghana. Nigeria labor unions begin a nationwide strike today, Monday, despite government rejections.
We had given notice to the government about a month ago that if May 31st, government did not reverse the 250% energy tariff hike, that we would go on strike.
Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Electoral Commission of South Africa on Sunday night announced official results that marked the start of a new era in the country's politics. Kate Butler reports from the Conference Center in Johannesburg, where Wednesday's general election was declared free and fair.
Official results from Wednesday's historic election showed the governing African National Congress, ANC, had lost its absolute majority for the first time. The ANC won 159 seats in the 400-member National Assembly, about 40% of the vote, a huge drop of 71 seats since winning 57% of the ballot in the last elections in 2019. The chairman of the Electoral Commission, Masoto Mopaya, acknowledged the election had been fiercely contested.
These elections were undoubtedly the most difficult and the most highly contested.
However, he said they were free and fair and represented the collective voice of the nation. While the ANC still received the largest number of seats by far, it will now have to enter a coalition with opposition parties. The business-friendly Democratic Alliance, or DA, took the second largest share of the vote with 87 seats. It was followed with 58 seats for Umkhonto we Sizwe, or MK, a newly formed party led by former President Jacob Zuma. The radical left Economic Freedom Fighters Party, overtaken by upstart MK, came in fourth with 39 seats. Smaller parties took the remaining seats. Analysts say corruption, high unemployment, and general failure to do more to improve the lives of poor black South Africans was why many turned on the ANC 30 years after it brought about the end of apartheid. After Sunday's announcement, President Cyril Ramaphosa took to the podium to accept the results.
Our people have spoken, whether we like it or not. Through their votes, they have demonstrated clearly and plainly that our democracy is strong, that our democracy is robust, and that it is enduring.
Zuma's MK said the day before the results announcement that it doesn't accept the results and wants a recount. Zuma intimated violence could ensue if it didn't get its way. However, Defense Minister Thandi Modise told VOA at the results ceremony that she was not worried.
Well, we have not necessarily taken extra measures. We have backed all political parties to become, and we hope that there will not be any necessity for any of us in the security sector to come in and to interfere.
The ANC now has 14 days in which to form a coalition government, so negotiations with other parties will be getting underway. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa is in search of partners to build a coalition government. This after results from the May 29th presidential and provincial elections announced Sunday showed that the ruling African National Congress, ANC, won just 40% of the total votes. Now, the ANC, having lost its majority for the first time in 30 years, is in search of partners to form a coalition government. Reporter Darren Taylor in Cape Town tells me the choices available to President Ramaphosa are all challenging.
Well, it could form a government of national unity with the centrist official opposition, the DA, the Democratic Alliance. The DA got 22% of the vote, which makes it the next biggest party after the ANC in South Africa. But the DA has policies that are fundamentally different from those of the ANC. For example, the DA is very pro-West, pro-America, pro-Europe, wants closer ties with that side of the world, and also wants to privatize inefficient state companies, which the ANC has previously said is a non-negotiable for them, and they'll never do this. The DA also wants to scrap affirmative action and other ANC black economic empowerment policies. It says the ANC has abused these to enrich itself and to enrich people close to the party. The DA wants these policies replaced with what it calls merit-based employment. Now, I have spoken a little while ago to DA leader John Steenhuisen, and he said he's willing to talk to what he calls the reasonable part of the ANC. In a speech about an hour ago, Steenhuisen appealed to parties that respect the Constitution to put what he called pettiness aside and work towards unity. And now he can only be talking about the ANC and Ramaphosa's ANC. Now, the purpose of these talks, said Steenhuisen, would be to rescue South Africa from a government of what he called the radical Umkhonto-we-Sizwe party of former President Jacob Zuma and Julius Malema's economic freedom fighters, the EFF.
Suppose the ANC decides and wants to partner with a combination of the Economic Freedom Fighters Party of Julius Malema and the MK Party. What are the possibilities and also the likely minefields?
There are still a lot of people within the ANC who are very supportive of Jacob Zuma, who feel that he was treated really unfairly and really badly by President Cyril Ramaphosa when Ramaphosa ousted him in late 2017. They just believe that he did good things for South Africa. Despite the many corruption allegations against him, he is immensely popular around South Africa, as this election has proved. So he's still got a hell of a lot of sympathy within the ANC. That, of course, puts the current ANC leadership, including Ramaphosa and the members of the national executive inside the ANC, in a big bind. Because if it does go with the Democratic Alliance and reject MK and EFF, it faces an internal revolt.
That's reporter Darren Taylor speaking with us from Cape Town, South Africa. A national spokesperson for South Africa Umkhonto-we-Sizwe MK Party says it will not engage the African National Congress in any discussion about a coalition government if President Cyril Ramaphosa remains at the helm of the ANC. Ntambulo Nomvela says that President Ramaphosa does not serve the interests of the MK Party. MK National Spokesperson Nsambulo Mvela tells me that the party's election performance is a restatement to the genius of former President Jacob Zuma.
Well, I mean, our party is a five-month-old party that was contesting mainstream elections against, you know, giants in the state. Not just giants, I mean, dinosaurs. And as a five-month-old baby, to outbox and outmaneuver and outsmart such big organizations. So we were certainly a case study that will go down in the history of how to disrupt, you know, the political landscape. But also it's a clear confirmation that people still trust President Zuma, and that President Zuma is indeed a political genius in the history of this country's politics. We believe that the results are a clear reflection of what has happened on the ground. We've picked up a lot of irregularities. We've raised objections regarding this. But the IEC and what would seem to be, you know, Western forces continue to disrupt the advancement of the agenda of the downtrodden people being liberated and emancipated from white monopoly capital and white rule, because it suits their narrative. As far as they're concerned, South Africa is a company, not a country. And as long as the DA is the official opposition, and Cyril Ramaphosa, who is the white monopoly capital puppet, it suits and drives their narrative. So a DA-ANC coalition only makes the leader of the DA the deputy president of the country.
Have you been approached by the African National Congress to join a coalition?
Yeah, Yes, African National Congress is a process, but we told them we will not engage in any discussion or any coalition discussions. One, if they're not willing to change the constitution and implement the policies that we were part of at the time then, which we know. Two, you know, as long as they have Cyril Ramaphosa at the helm, who's a stooge of white monopoly capital, who's there to come and destroy the ANC, who's a traitor, who's selling our country. How do we align with a person who wants to form a coalition with the DA? Let me tell you what's going to happen. The DA will form a coalition with the ANC. They'll make certain demands. They'll say that he must be deputy president of the country. They'll fight for speaker of parliament position, bring back the charges against Cyril Ramaphosa, get him out for Palapala, and then put their own president. And guess what? This country is controlled by the West. Can't allow that. So that's why Cyril Ramaphosa must go. We can't negotiate with Cyril Ramaphosa. We can't give our votes to the West.
I think I read that President Ramaphosa says he's not going to resign.
Well, then he's going to, that's the death of the ANC.
So who are you willing to work with?
Ask yourself this question. How is it that individuals who can see that there is a bloodbath, the ANC moves from about 50% to 40% of the back of a liability in the form of Cyril Ramaphosa, and if they want to continue with that kind of a liability, does that make sense to you? You can see the man is a liability, but you want to continue engaging. How do you do that? They will get rid of Cyril Ramaphosa if people love the ANC. Look at how much damage he has done.
So you are not planning on joining any coalition government as long as Ramaphosa is there?
Will engage with the ANC,
but
will not engage with the ANC
from Ramaphosa. Nsambula Mvela is the national spokesperson for South Africa's Nkonto we Sizwe MK Party. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, June 3rd. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The Nigerian Labour Congress and the Trade Union Congress say their indefinite nationwide strike scheduled for today, Monday, June 3rd, will take place. This despite the fact that the government says the strike would be unconstitutional. The government also says the strike would not be in the interest of the country, especially while negotiations are continuing. The workers want a new national minimum wage and for the government to reverse the hike in the electricity tariff. Benson Opa is the head of information and public affairs at the Nigeria Labour Congress. He tells me the federal government did not take the workers' May 31st ultimatum seriously.
We had given notice to the government about a month ago that if May 31st, government did not reverse the 250% energy tariff hike. We also said if government failed to reach a negotiated conclusion on the minimum wage, national minimum wage, that we would go on strike. Of course, none of that has happened. You recall, we had embarked on a warning protest to press home our demand that there was a strong need to reverse those reasonable tariff hikes. The government has not seen the need to do that.
The government says your strike, if it does go on, will not be in the interest of the country. The government stresses particularly that you want to strike in the middle of negotiations.
We are not striking in the middle of negotiations. We are striking because negotiations have collapsed and there is no willingness, there's no indication, there is no sign of seriousness on the part of the government. Even they invite us for meetings and they're not there. Secondly, don't forget that the National Minimum Wage Law of 2019 expired sometime in April. That law states that 6 months before the expiration of the law, negotiations should be concluded. But government detailed on that, so that didn't happen. And government is not bothered that we are where we are. I tell you, at the moment, inflation is trending at 33.7%. Food inflation is trending at 40%. PMS is over 700 naira per liter. Where does that happen in the world?
Are you being joined by workers in the private sector?
Yes, we are joined by workers in the organized private sector. And let me also add that the organized private sector are not impressed by the stance of the government. because their businesses have all but collapsed.
The government says that whatever happened, the new minimum wage you are asking for, it should not lead to what the government calls widespread job losses, particularly in the organized private sector.
Yeah, the government is talking about the symptoms. What is causing job losses or what will cause potential job losses will not be wage increase or a raise or rise in national minimum wage, but government's policies, okay? First policy is the removal of fuel subsidy without dealing with the criminal content of it, okay? Two, government massively devalued the naira from 350 to the dollar to 1,900. At the moment, it is stabilizing around 1,600 or 1,700. This has raised costs for manufacturers. And now, while they were reeling from the after effects of this, you introduce a 250% hike in energy tariff. Where does that work?
What is the minimum wage for workers in the private sector? And what is the minimum wage in the public sector?
At the moment, it is established that no worker in the private sector earns less than 70,000, while in the public sector, it's been a grudging 30,000. The private sector has consistently performed much better in terms of remuneration than the public sector.
Benson Upa is the head of information and public affairs at the Nigerian Labour Congress. He was speaking with us from Abuja. Last week, the Liberian government began repatriating 4,323 of its citizens from Ghana. Thousands of Liberians who fled their country during the civil war in the early 1990s and ending in 2002 have been living at the Bujumbura refugee camp in Ghana. Rita Jlabuduo has been speaking with the returnees at their transit center in Bon County, central Liberia, and has this report.
In 2010, the Ghanaian Refugee Board reached an agreement with the UN Refugee Agency to close the camp. In March, Ghanaian authorities began demolishing the structures of the camp. According to the Liberian government, the over 4,000 exiled Liberians are being repatriated in phases. Last week, a batch of 770 people arrived at the National Transit Center in Bon County. 34-year-old Gopuwule was taken to Ghana in 2002 during the Second Civil War. She could not hold back her tears when she narrated the sufferings of Liberian refugees in Ghana.
So in the great Ghanaian society, is very, very difficult. I learned to do beauty care. I do pedicure, manicure, braiding, weaving, and things. But whenever you go for a job in a Ghanaian society, they will not agree to take you because you are a foreigner. I had my little shop on a camp that I was depending on for survival. And they broke the place and broke where I was also living. Waka came to our aid. We really appreciate his effort. We said thank you to the Liberal government and everyone that sponsored this for us. And I feel too good to be home. I left here when I was a child. Now I'm back.
Gopu is not the only person happy to return home. 48-year-old Mary Topowe fled the war when she was 18. She says coming back home was her greatest wish.
I'm happy to be back home. I was praying for it and it happened. Because I registered a long, long time in Ghana to leave that country and come back home. Because nowhere to turn, you can't be in peace. So now my police can't enter in the camp, beating people, pulling on us, all women there, distressing them. Because why? The country is not your home.
Unlike Mary and others, 30-year-old Bill says things were a bit better for him because he learned to speak the official language and some local dialects of Ghana.
Foreigner being in Ghana, it have a lot of challenge, but we try to fight it because we understand the system and we speak their general language with the tree and other dialect, the Hausa, Ewe. So it was fine. Not for others. I talk for myself.
Meanwhile, Bill and Abraham say they were happy to be home until they saw several social media posts quoting the boss of the Liberia Refugees Repatriation and Resettlement Commission, or LRRC. He says that 80% of the returnees are at-risk people.
Maybe he do it to get money from international community, but these are things that really bring us down, make me feel bad of coming into my country about someone using the words that I'm Zoku, I'm thief. So no one will be able to trust me in my own country. So it better I go back to where I come from.
Upon hearing about their disappointment, the LRRC's executive director, Patrick Wozie, immediately apologized to the Liberian returnees, but says a majority of them were found with illegal substances during the screening process.
Everyone at the government of the state, you eat drugs, we say sorry to your heart, but the truth is the truth, it must be told.
The head of the LRRC disclosed that as part of the reintegration process, each family head will receive $300 United States and a dependent will get $225 United States as well as housing units for those who are in need. The repatriation package contains projects that promote agriculture. According to the LRRC, they are intended to empower returnees support the national agenda whose first priority is food production. For VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Rita Jwaduo in Monrovia, Liberia.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with basketball. Angolan giants Petro de Luanda beat Al Ahly of Libya 179.4 points on Saturday to win the 2024 Basketball African League Championship played at the BK Arena, Kigali, Rwanda. This is Petro de Luanda's first continental title since winning the 2015 FIBA Africa Champions Cup in their capital of Luanda. The Angolan champions trailed 52-40 points at the break, but managed to turn things around in the third quarter to end Al Ahly's three-game winning streak in the postseason. From basketball to tennis, where number 8 seed Tunisian Ons Jabeur moved into the quarterfinals of Roland Garros by defeating Dane Clara Toxin 6-4-6-4 at the Roland Garros in Paris on Sunday afternoon. The 29-year-old Tunisian will be playing in her 7th Slam quarterfinals, all of which have come since the start of the 2020 season. Jabeur's trek to the last 8 also includes victories over American wildcard Sasha Vicari, Colombian Camila Osorio, and Canadian Leila Fernandez. She will play number 3 seed American Coco Gauff in the quarterfinals. And on to rugby, where Kenya Sevens rugby team, the Shujaa, made an emphatic return to the Rugby Sevens series by downing Germany 33-15 in the promotion relegation quarterfinals on Sunday at the Wanda Metropolitano Stadium in Madrid. Germany were the first over the line, but captain Vincent Onyala struck almost immediately, with co-captain Tony Omondi adding the extras to secure a 7-5 lead in the opening exchanges. The team had earlier defeated Chile 36-7 in their final pool game on Saturday after a narrow 10-5 loss to host Spain and a 19-12 victory over Samoa in their opening fixtures on Friday. In football news, Nigeria international Victor Osimhen's future at Napoli remains uncertain as his hefty €130 million release clause deters potential suitors. The Nigerian striker is reportedly keen on a new challenge, possibly in the Premier League in England, while Napoli are eager to generate a significant transfer fee. The summer transfer window could see Osimhen depart Naples, but his high valuation has become a major setback. Chelsea have shifted their focus to signing a young striker in the mode of RB Leipzig's Slovenia international Benjamin Sesko. Paris Saint-Germain also emerged as a possible destination, but they appear to have prioritized signing Hivcia Kvaratskhelia, who is seen as a better fit for their system following Kylian Mbappe's departure. And finally, African nations will resume their road to qualification for the FIFA World Cup 2026 on Wednesday this week. Match day 3 and match day 4 of the qualifiers will be played between the 5th to the 11th of June 2024. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, June 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Botti, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.